It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. Good to see my partner, Captain Mike Ward.
Always good to see you, Sean.
The award-winning FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, as judged by the Alabama Broadcasters Association.
How about that? You did good.
Yeah, we did good. We got a trophy and everything for it. So it's
that's
a good
the first.
Deal. Yeah, it is. It was the first year we put in.
Yeah, right.
But you're right.
Hey, but that's good. The first time you entered it,
yes,
first
sir.
Time we won it.
That's right. So
that's a pretty good dude.
Batting 1,000 here. Yeah. I like it. And also, we're going to talk a lot of fishing on today's show. We did a kind of midway through turkey season episode last week where
right.
we switched gears into the fishing world. And if it wasn't, Mike has always beaten me at everything. And, we're tied on turkeys right now, but I had a little bit of a moment here where I caught a box, big bunch of crappie, white perch, about 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
And I was kind of strutting around about that, And then Mike comes in this morning. He got his picture in there. How big a cooler is that? Is that the 80?
Yeah, at least.
It's an 80 quart cooler or bigger. That other than one bass he's got on the top is nothing but brim and ice and shell crackers.
Yep.
Son, and that private lake before any of the internet police come out there,
yep.
private pond. So you whacked them.
Did good. It was fun.
That was
hadn't done that. I've never caught them like that before, I don't think.
That is, you get on yep. The brim.
Turkey hunting has been so-so, but the fishing has been good.
That brim fishing is good. And this man doesn't even get distracted by turkeys. He stays with the fish all the time, although we got to take him to catch some brim as well. From A-Team Fishing Adventures, it's always great to get our friend Captain Bobby Aprescato on. And without ado, here he is. Hey, man.
So let me ask you this.
Here we go.
One time, the one time that you enter and you win the award, the broadcast award, right, and you mm-hmm. win it. Does that mean you're? Yeah, so we can say you're undefeated.
We are undefeated. That you're correct.
You're undefeated.
We're yep. undefeated.
You're undefeated.
And so we will not.
Until Mike put it on you with that box of brim and shell cracker, right?
I'll tell you what we're going to do is we're not going to put in next year for the award, so we can stay undefeated.
never enter again.
That's it.
Yeah.
And with the picture Sean's been sending me, I guess it doesn't sound like a turkey hunting's all too bad because Sean's even killing some turkeys.
That's right.
Yeah. It's got to be good.
And could have killed more, but he's been passing them up.
Yeah. I tell you, quick story, and then we'll get into fishing, but y'all, when you take people, you guide people turkey hunting, and they're new to the sport, and a buddy of mine I took last weekend, you got to tell them to shoot. And I forgot to do that, and I finished the hunt. His strutter came in, right on top, and finally, you could hear the video. I'm like, you see him, the big one there, the strutter? I'm whispering to him about 10 feet away, and finally, when it's over, I said, what happened? He said, well, you didn't tell me to shoot, and I said, you're right, I didn't, so it's on me. Like, Bobby, you have to tell people to set the hook, don't you?
Yeah, that's what Sean and I talked about this the other morning on the Thursday morning fishing report. Is he was telling me that story, which I thought was hilarious. And what I have to do every once in a while, sometimes not always with novice anglers, but with experienced anglers, is how we all tend to daydream when your cork goes under. It means you got a fish, so I'll nudge him and go like, when your cork goes under, that means you got a fish. So that's kind of like Sean's story about shooting when the turkey gets close enough to be shot.
Yeah, I'm thinking about just thinking about corks going under too. That is what so many ways to catch speckled trout that I love. But there's that great thing about seeing that cork go under, or if you take your eyes away for a split second and you look back and your cork's gone and you know you're about to come up solid on
that's
a fish.
That's when it goes down.
It is.
You
it
look feels, at it for 10 minutes and then you turn your head for 2 seconds and look back, it's gone.
But it's so exciting to see it gone, too, because you're about to come up on a fish, man. I love it. I still, if pushing 52, I still love every bit of it.
I don't care what age you are. Everybody likes seeing a cork going under. And Mikey is exactly right. I tell my clients every once in a while, of course, jokingly, is they go like, "Oh, I wasn't looking at my cork." I'm like, "Wait a minute, you've been looking at your cork all day. No wonder you're not catching anything. You're gonna turn your head, man. You're gonna get bit every time."
That, for some reason, you're right, Bobby.
You know, I do the same thing.
They seem to just know.
Yeah,
they, that's when they're gonna wait. Or the all of us have fished, you know, like croakers on a tight line, you know, free line or tight line, croakers on the beach for trout in the next few months. You've been looking at these two rods that are set back there with kale hooks. All you got to do is turn and walk up front to the bow.
Yeah.
And then if you turn around, it's like magic, and then both rods are bent over going down. But if you're looking at them, they don't
touch in the water.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So that's the key. Y'all, the takeaway here from the best fishing guide I know in the world here and on the Gulf Coast for sure, Captain Bobby Abrascato's tip is don't look at the cork and don't look at your rods.
don't look at your rods. Yeah, get rid of it. Okay, guys, well, I'm done. We'll talk next weekend, I guess.
Everything,
that's all I got.
That's all you need to know. It's not location.
That's
it's not time
got.
Of year.
Yeah.
It's just don't look at the rod, and you get bit. Wow. Well, other than that, we're going to talk this show about spring fishing. It's always great. We get to, if y'all don't know, and you can go back through all the archives here in the podcast, that we make sure to have Bobby on to talk about wintertime fishing, springtime fishing, summer and fall each year inshore. And this is our spring show, which is always fun to do because it's, I'm going to guess, Bobby, your favorite time of year to be a trout fisherman?
It is, and it's because it's turkey hunting season. That means all you turkey hunting guys that love the speckled trout fish are out in the woods chasing turkeys. You know, so
that's right.
That's why I always tell everybody, I'm not even a turkey hunter, and I love turkey season. You know?
You better enjoy it pretty quick because this thing's getting ready to wrap up. We getting ready to come at you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I hear you.
The Armada will be coming your way.
If you're done turkey hunting, then are you getting ready to get done turkey hunting? I can tell you this: the good news is it's been pretty good, man. One of the things that we've dealt with, especially in the last, few weeks, is to a couple things, really, is we've had, you guys know this, we've had, you know, fairly cool weather for this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
We've had, up until recently, you know, some nights in the mid-40s down on the coast. And that's a little cool for, you know, early into mid-April. And so it's kept the water temperature down, and some of the fish that were kind of transitioning out of the rivers just weren't really doing it. You know, they weren't really coming. They come out, you catch some fish at the mouth, and you catch some fish on the flats, and then, you know, then you get a couple cold nights, and the water get real low, and you'd have to move back into the mouths of the rivers. But in the last week or so, with, you know, getting a lot of sun on the water and it warming up a little bit. Matter of fact, this past week was the first week that I fished in shorts so far this year. It's been that cool, and I've had a few days where we left, where I've left in the morning with a sweatshirt, a jacket, and a beanie on. And I can't remember doing that many times, and you know, very many times in April. But so anyway, just kind of getting back a little bit more towards the present, man. It's kind of gotten to be more like towards a true transition. Way back in the day, we always talk about tax day being mm-hmm. the day that you really could, you know, get that full transition. And it was really one of more of those kind of old classic years, you know, where we hit, you know, this time of year where I felt like it was a true transition where the fish had moved out, truly out of the rivers. The other thing that, you know, probably helped with some of that too, by the way, backing up a little bit, is we had that deluge. When was that? Last Saturday night? Whenever it was, mm-hmm. we had that 3 or 4 inches of rain, depending on where you were, and that really took care of it. So, you know, with that, you know, a lot of the fish I'm catching and have been catching over the last week have been, you know, way out, more out on the flats, on the drop-offs when the water got low or the sun got up, or more of the drop-offs of the flats. Early in the morning, a little bit more up on the flats where there's shell and grass are the kind of places that I'm catching right now. And that's just more like classic springtime fishing.
Yeah, it is. I would mention this. I will come back to this subject as we talk about springtime fishing. But yeah, if things wouldn't have changed much and they kind of still a little bit cool, it looks like I wouldn't be wet wading until maybe mid-June. It was going with the water temperature.
Like this year.
What's the water temperature right now, Bobby?
Well, I don't have the boat I'm in right now, I have not put a transducer in the water, but somebody told me the other day that they were reading low 70s. I don't think it's that warm yet, you know, just based on what I'm feeling in the water. I can't give you the exact, there's probably some some gauges that you can read, and you got to be careful when you start reading those gauges, because when you're getting upstate rain coming down through the bay and you read gauges out in Mobile Bay, it's going to read way cooler than what it truly is where you're going to be fishing.
That's
so
right.
If I had to guess right now, I'd say just generally speaking, it's around 70 degrees, which, and I'm like Sean, when you get, you start getting around upper 60s or 70s before it gets light.
Yikes.
You know, that's a little cold on the Captain Bobo meter, you know.
Yeah.
That's time for the waders.
I'm still going to be wearing waders right now, you know, I might get a little bit ahead of ourselves right here, but, you know, early next week we go into that full moon period, and it's a late April full moon. And so if you like, you know, if you know anything about trout fishing, or you follow anything about trout fishing, you'll know that that full moon period is a great period for those fish to gather up, and they're in a spawn right now. So it's going to be one of those kind of years where we got the late April moon, and then of course the May moon, a good chance to catch some really quality fish. So I'm hoping, if everything works out right, to be in the water next week around that moon.
All right, we're going to talk about that in just a second. I do want to say, as people try to break down spring fishing, you're going to talk about this. Temperature is a key, like you said. Also, what they're eating. You mentioned the other day that the waves of shrimp are starting to come in, right? You're starting to see that?
Yes, that's right. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I want to talk a little bit about that. Yeah, that's another thing that starts to happen when we start to get the water temperature levels where we're at right now. And I don't know why the water temperature doesn't affect like that on the shrimp, but just in the last 2 weeks or last week and a half, I've seen some bird schools, which obviously are hovering over shrimp. And the other thing I've seen out in the sound, particularly, is shrimp boats pulling. And that's an easy giveaway as to whether or not the shrimp are showing up. So those guys don't like just pulling those nets to burn diesel.
Nope.
Guys catching anything.
Well
they
said.
They want to catch something. So when you see them out there pulling, you know, when I'm leaving on my trips just before daybreak, and they're pulling, you know, they'll make their last pull right before daylight. And, you know, when they're doing that, they're catching shrimp. So when I start to see that, I'm starting to think, you know, in terms of waves of shrimp coming in. And then, like I said, too, is you get these, so we're getting these bird schools now. Not a lot of them yet, but they're going to start, it's going to start being more prevalent with those bird schools. But I've seen enough of them in the last week and a half to tell me that kind of thing's starting to happen too.
We're going to pick it up when we come back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors with Captain Bobby Aprescato from A-Team Fishing Adventures. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward with a box full of Bremen shell crackers.
Yes, sir.
Captain Bobby talking spring fishing for speckled trout. And Bobby, as we look at this, you talk about this year, how it lines up weather-wise. But yeah, we're going from a point where the fish were in the rivers, in the deeper water. And by the end of this thing, the fish will be in the bay and the sound in deeper water. Right? I mean, they're going from deeper water, doing a transition and going back to deeper water, but it's that time in between that we're all looking for when they're not in deeper
water.
That's
what we're talking about. Yeah, when we start talking about transitional periods, that's what we're talking about. That period when they're making that move, which can be, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. It's spring and fall, and those are our key transitional periods. But, yeah, that's exactly right.
So we got this, and we're going to get into full moon specific, because we're going to talk some general stuff too. Just, I mean, you could be listening to this 10 years from now and get good tips on spring fishing. But we're specific.
Let me say something about that real quick.
Okay.
You mentioned this very briefly when we were opening, is I was driving to that function the other day with Dalton, that North Baldwin, and I was listening. You guys were doing a replay, because you and Mike were, as you said, I'm doing air quotes here, on assignment, which means y'all were turkey on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, and I'm listening to this guy on the radio, and he's talking about springtime fishing. I'm like, this guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about. It was me.
Yeah.
And it was from last year. I don't know if he knows what he's talking about. It sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. See, and that's why some of the stuff I want to make sure. I mean, you know, that we'll talk about some specifics, but the ideas that you teach us here, these things are good year to year. It does change on what the water temperature is then, or what the moon cycle is. So specifically, you're so very excited right now with the full moon coming. You said a late full moon.
A late full moon. The way it falls is, you know, we get a full moon every 28 point, specifically every 28.35 days.
Mm-hmm.
But or 28.7 days, I'm sorry. So you're about once a month, you're going to have a full moon fall sometime during the month. And so the way it works out is as the months go by, that day keeps moving back in April. Anyway, we won't dwell a whole lot on that, but the gist of it is there's a full moon every month, and the fish react the same way, the trout react to it the same way every month, whether it be December or whether it be May. They still tend to gather up and act like they're spawning in the months that they're not even spawning, like said December, November, whatever. But when they get to May or April, especially in a late April like this, you got water temperatures like we just talked about in the 68 to 72 degree range. You got salinity that's good. And so that's why that becomes a true peak spawning period. When they get that salinity right, the water temperature right, that's when they start doing that true spawning. And that's also when the females are most laden with the roe. That's when they're the heaviest, you know. And so there's a true spawn going on. And so you've got these big groups of males and females, way more males, but a lot of nice females in there with them spawning. And when you get that together, number one, there's competition. So you got a lot of fish gathered up in small areas. There's competition. And two, trout, unlike some other species, feed aggressively when they're spawning. So they don't shut down the way some species of fish do. So that's why that, you know, this period, which we're going to talk about late April to on into May around the full moon, is when all that recipe comes together, where all those things, the moon, the salinity, the water temperature, all come together, and shallow water too on top of that. They'll really like, you know, get up in that shallow water over that hard bottom. So there's a lot of things that come together to make it just that magic period that we talk about a lot.
And when you talk about hard bottom, what are you talking about, shales mainly?
Yeah, anything, Mike, anything except mud. So you could be talking about shell. You could be talking about rock where they put down reefs. You could be talking about grass, and in even some cases where you've got sand, a good hard sand bottom, like the beaches sometimes. But basically anything except mud, because the way that they spawn, when they lay, the female lays the eggs, they are sticky, and they actually want them to, for a successful spawn, they want them to stick to something, and the males will get up current and fertilize the eggs. So that, you know, they instinctively know, you know, where they need to be for a successful spawn. So it's any kind of hard bottom to where, you know, any kind of substrate like that to where they can, you know, that can take place. So that's basically in our area, that's anything but mud.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because I think that's important too. I mean, you'll delineate this here a little bit, but, you know, springtime fishing is not about the spot, right? It's not about, they're all on the spot because they're constantly moving. But if we're going to try to dial in to the places we're going to find these trout spawning, it's going to be hard bottom of some sort.
Hard bottom.
So you can get rid of anything that's muddy. Let's forget about that. Let's move to something that's not mud bottom. At least that helps us cut it down a little bit in where to find them.
Oh, yeah, that cuts it down a bit. And then the other thing is, too, is go ahead and just kind of like back up a little bit to the early part of the transition, like we were talking about, where they're from the mouths of the rivers moving out into those bays. So start looking at the geography that we have. And if you're listening from somewhere else, you know, outside of the Alabama coast, you know, it's the same thing. They're going to move out of those rivers, the deeper rivers and bayous, out into the bays that are adjacent to those rivers. And so that's the other thing I do, is start looking at that and start looking at where, you know, there's oil. You can look on a nautical map, and it'll show you where oyster reefs are. And then nowadays, you got these top spot maps, and you got electronic maps that show where reefs are, that sort of thing. So those are the places you want to be. That's the kind of place you want to be this time of year.
And people are going to say to you, well, those are big areas. Well, yeah, they are, but you have a way. I mean, you're going to – I know you give us some visual cues. You talked about birds, but also, I mean, slicks and things. I mean, you're going to try to find those, or if you can't find those, how do you start – you know, if you don't see a big fish slick or you don't see the bird school, how do you start breaking down that area? How do you decide, hey, this is, you know, going to be worth doing or not?
Well, usually what I do, the first thing I do without, and even if I'm expecting bird schools or slicks, the first thing I do is look at what kind of wind direction I'm going to have, and what kind of tidal level I'm going to have. Not so much the tide, make sure I say this right, not sure the tide horizontally, but more vertically. I want to know how much water I'm going to have. It's going to determine what area I'm going to fish in. If it's going to be an extremely low water event like we had last week around that eclipse and that new moon and all that stuff, I'm not going to fish like a super, super shallow area, like say Grand Bay or something like that. I'm going to move to a place like, you know, Heron Bay or even Portersville Bay that's got a little bit of water. So that's and the other thing you want to look at is if you get like a southwest wind, for example, all of that stuff I just said right there, Portersville and Grand, that's a waste of time. You're going to go over there and it's going to be muddy, even especially in the shallow water. So I look at the wind direction. If I got like east in the wind, if I know I'm going to have some east in the wind or north in the wind particularly, I'll be in the sound. You know, so that's the first thing I do. And then from there it would be, and if I don't, you know, if I'm running to point A, my A spot or whatever you want to call it, and I'm running along and I don't see any birds, I'm going to go ahead and start where I caught them fairly recently because I know they're going to probably be somewhere around there, and then start looking for those signs. And sometimes, like the trip, a couple of the trips I had this week, I had no visual indication of fish.
Okay.
So that's... I just started fishing some where I knew there was a little bit of bottom undulation, some bars sticking off the points of some island, something to gather fish. And we started catching fish, you know, so.
Yeah, I think that's a key, too, because we, I think that's important saying that because there's so much a perfect day. Yes, it's a bird school or big slick, and we'll talk about how to fish slicks here in a little bit. But you don't always have that. You don't always have those visual cues.
No. The dream days is you do, but those, as you guys well know, whether it be turkey hunting, deer hunting, bass fishing, brim fishing, or trout fishing, you have less of those ideal days, perfect days, than you have the ones like, you know, like you normally have. So yeah, you're right. You got to figure out how to do it without all of that. And the other thing too is it doesn't take long. You know, when you drift some of this stuff, don't spend 2 hours trying to fish a place if you're not getting bit. You know, it doesn't take long. If you're drifting along with some wind, you know, along the edges of a drop-off or across a point of a bar, you're going to know pretty quick if you're going to catch fish. So don't throw your anchor out or put your power poles down and keep casting and hope you get a bite and the fish swim. That's not going to happen this time of year. You got to go look for the fish this time of year. You know, again, it's nice when you get those visual indications, but more often than not, if you don't get them, you're going to have to go find them. And which I think is kind of cool. That's another reason I like fishing this time of year is you have to find the fish instead of going to, here's the air quotes again, spots, you know.
Yep. Yeah, and I've watched it fishing with you over the years, too. I mean, there's a certain amount of time you're going to give it, and, you know, maybe right away it's not on, but you drift into the fish. But, yeah, there's a certain point where Bobby says, and you're like, oh, we have – he's like, nope, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. You know, you've seen enough
it
there.
And I tend to fish probably faster than I probably should, but some people have different styles of fishing. But even if you fish moderately slow or even slower than I do, which is not saying a whole lot, you don't spend a lot of time like you would at, say, a gas rig or something like that drifting bait because it's not that kind of fishing. You got to stick and move until you find some fish.
You talk about shallow, too. Depth-wise, what do you consider the range here? You talk about 2 feet, but, I mean, where is that hard bottom too deep? Where's your range of what you're looking for in depth?
Well, this time of year, this time of year, you could fish really, theoretically, you could fish any depth. I mean, they'll spawn over any depth. I just, as they start to move out of these rivers, I like to follow them, you know, all those bays I mentioned, those areas mm-hmm. I mentioned, you know, our geography here, just have that water column of 2 to, say, 5 feet. And so that's what I'm fishing. That doesn't mean that you can't. And I've had people ask me this before. They'll go like, well, you tell me I can't go catch a fish at a gas rig or a reef and that's 10 or 12 feet of water in April. Of course you can. Of course you can. If it's got a hard bottom and the salinity's right, certainly you can. If you like to do that kind of fishing, there's a chance you're going to catch them. But I like to catch them as they're coming out of these rivers, moving out of these bays and heading for said spots, and in those kind of places. So that's just the way I like to fish it. But I certainly tell everybody, you know, if you want to fish, you know, man-made reefs and 10 feet of water in April, you certainly got a good chance of catching fish, and it'll work just fine.
All right, coming back.
But I like that shallow. I just happen to like fishing the shallow stuff.
Well, it's the best when we get to do it. I second that. Yeah. Coming right back, more with Captain Bobby Averscato from 18 Fishing Adventures right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We'll be right back. back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along. Remember, you can check us out on Facebook as well, where you can see Mike and I posed up with our trophy.
Yes, sir.
Over at facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So put that in there. Plus, you can see our story from last week about baiting turkeys with crickets and a bunch more available over there. And we continue our conversation with our friend. And it just a font of information. The stuff, the guy's forgotten more stuff than any of us will probably learn about speckled trout fishing. My buddy, Captain Bobby Aprescato. And I want to say this before we even go further, because I know we got some questions that Mike was talking about during the break. But people want to get a trip booked with you. If they want to even do it before you get off the air with us, how do they do that?
Just go to ateamfishing.com. That's our website. And it's got our Contact Us tab. It's real easy to either call or just send in a little email form. And A-Team Fishing is also our social media sites, Instagram and Facebook, are both at A-Team Fishing. You can check those out and message us through those. So that's by far the easiest way.
Good stuff. Okay, the conversation, and I want to get into, before we wrap up, I do want to get into like breaking down how you set up, once you find the fish, what you do. But first, Mike was talking about a hard structure. You were asking about that Cedar Point stuff.
The new Cedar Point rocks out there. I haven't seen it. I've seen pictures that people have sent me, but I haven't been down to the island to see it. But everybody's talking about that's got to be a great place to fish with all the rocks out there. What do you think?
Yep, and it was already a good place over there that way. They had put in some shoreline protection. I don't know if it was a test or whatever, but I had been fishing over there quite a bit way before they started putting those in. It was a great area to fish if you had like a hard west or northwest wind, because it was one of the areas that really kept the bay fairly clear. And the design of that thing, the way I'm looking at it and what I've seen, is very similar to what they've done way up there at the mouth of East Fowl River, and kind of similar to what they've done around the Point of Pines area outside of Little Bay, outside of Little River. And so I think it's you know, once it all settles in and all, you know, gets put where it's, you know, all the mud and everything gets put back and it settles, it's going to take a little while. It ain't going to be an overnight deal. But I think the way it's going to set up, it creates these ambush points, which is what it's done in those other two couple places I mentioned. And it's going to just basically congregate some fish. And I think it's, you know, at some point it's going to be. Now, the thing about that area, like I said, you're going to have to be particular about when you fish. You're not going to be able to go there on a 15-knot southeast wind and catch fish.
Sure.
It's not going to work. That's why they're putting those in there, is to protect that roadway. And not for us fishermen. They're putting it in there to protect that causeway. And but if you get like a west and northwest wind, And surprisingly, it seems like southwest will work, but it's actually southwest blows right up that beach. So, you know, anything with a west to northwest component in it or no wind, I think it's going to be a pretty good place to fish, you know. So we kind of got a double whammy. We've got road protection and we got some new areas to target on certain conditions.
Yeah, just the road, just a small thing about the road protection, obviously keeping it from washing out, but I bet you it's going to make some people that work for the county, and I think probably the city of Dauphin Island. I don't know how far up the city of Dauphin Island goes, but for the county, after we have some kind of tropical storm or whatever, and they got to get logs and stuff off the off the road there, those yeah. logs won't be up on the road. They'll be stopped out further, which is, you know,
hopefully.
Hopefully, unless it's real big. Yeah, we got to be honest about that. But regular storm, you know, I mean, that would often be, you get a storm, get a little push there, like Bobby said, southeast wind and high tide, low pressure, and you'd have, you know, firewood stacked on the road there. So,
that's right.
But yeah, that's that hard bottom stuff we're looking for. And listen, I think, not to just go science nerd, we're on the fishing show here, but that, you know, everything that I've read and the people I interview and talk to with the Sea Lab and USA Marine Sciences, it all builds on itself. If you can get the oysters sticking there, they'll clear up the water to be able to make more oyster reefs on their own, go further out. It makes more, you know, you start the
ecosystem.
We crank the engine and let her rip. So I think it's a good thing.
Yep, I agree with you. I think that's exactly right. And that's, you know, we could go off on, like you said, like the science nerd is, and I'm all for that. Anything that's going to help that help the environment that we have. That area there used to be rich with oyster, and it's just not anymore. And a lot of it's because, you know, it starts with the whole cycle of getting the water clear and clearing up for grass to grow and for oysters to grow and that sort of thing, which, you know, enhances the clarity and so on and so forth. So it's like a snowball effect where you get that going on. So, yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with that.
Okay, let's talk about
it. Let me put it this way. Worst case, let's just say there's a naysayer out there sitting there listening right now.
Uh-huh.
It ain't hurting nothing.
No, there you go.
What they're doing ain't hurting. It ain't hurting nothing. I can tell you that's the worst thing that's happened is it's status quo. That's the worst thing, and I don't think that's the case. Right. I think most people agree with that.
Bobby's probably going to throw something at me through the phone here, but I can say that general area, wide general area, something similar to that had happened by mistake a while ago. Bobby, don't kill me here. That turned into a heck of a fishing place, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
As long as you don't give the GPS numbers away.
I will not. Hey, not even under torture, would I? But, I mean, that, you know, that area with some hard structure can be a place to catch a bunch of fish. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. But it's another one, just real quick before we leave this. It's that area that you're talking about is very, very, very condition sensitive. You got to really have the right condition, which is exactly what we were just talking about over there.
Yeah, you got to have some west in it.
Yep.
Got to have some west
in it. That's all we'll say about it.
That's it. Okay, I'm done. I'm probably in big trouble right now. So I do want to talk about breaking down. So if somebody's going to talk about these areas coming out the rivers, they're finding these trout, they're drifting, they're finding these trout. Let's go scenario number one. Cork goes down, they're drifting. And we can talk about, you know, do you use drift socks? When do you use drift socks at all?
I don't much anymore. I use my trolling motor a lot more now to keep the boat squared and slow the drift down. So I turn the boat sideways. Drift socks, for people that aren't familiar with those, basically just like a parachute that you used to be able to throw off the beam of the boat and or off the stern of the boat, whichever way you wanted to do it, and it would slow the drift down on a real windy day. And but now I can take a trolling motor, especially with the remote control trolling motors. I can do it with hand control trolling motors too, and basically turn the boat square to the wind, 90 degrees to the wind direction, and keep the boat square. If you turn the boat square to the wind, 90 degrees to the wind, it's going to slow the drift down dramatically.
Yep.
So all I'm doing is using the trolling motor basically to function like that drift sock used to do.
And I still... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I still, drift socks work great. The problem with that I have with, the only other problem I had with drift socks is, I'm trying to get myself in trouble here, but the 20 that I got floating around somewhere in Mobile Bay, I got to pull them in when I took off. You don't have to worry about that with a... So if anybody has found a drift sock, I hope they found all of the ones that I've blown out of my boat.
Yep.
But you got to remember to pull them in. They got a dump line on them, and you got to remember to pull them in, which sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. And very often I'd look like a drag racer with the parachute behind the boat when I run into my next spot.
And I always liked to before just to get the boat square, like you said, so I didn't have any complaining from somebody who said that I was, you know, oh, you're going to put
front
me in the
boat.
Back. Yeah, front boating them. Okay, so you're drifting here. Cork goes down. So we don't have any visual cues, but a cork goes down. What do you do?
Stop.
Okay.
Stop. Do whatever you have to do to get the boat stopped. And just backing up just a little bit, you're drifting from upwind to downwind. So you're drifting in to say whatever, you say you're fishing a blind spot, a point like we're talking about, or a visual cue like a trout slick or a bird slick. You're drifting in from upwind to downwind. So you're casting downwind. And so when that cork goes down, when you get a bite, even if you miss the fish, whatever it is that you use to stop your boat, to anchor your boat, that's when you get it out. Whether it be a Cajun anchor, which is just a stick you could throw in the mud. I used to, back in the day, used to keep a little small anchor.
Because
you remember, you're fishing in three, 4 feet of water, so it doesn't take much to hold your boat. You don't want a big heavy anchor that you have to pull up every time. I used to just have it laying on the front up by me and just kick it over. Didn't even have a chain on it, just had a piece of rope, and it was enough to stop the boat. And then you didn't have to fight an anchor when you got ready to drift again. Or nowadays, the remote control trolling motor works fine. I 100% prefer the power poles because, again, we're in, you know, plenty shallow enough for the power pole, even a short power pole, to work. And so with that case, you just hit the button and you stop. And then when you get ready to drift again, you push the button and you get going again. But whatever it takes to stop the boat, you want to stop, because these fish, as we mentioned earlier, they're in massive schools. And so when you found one, you've usually found a whole bunch of them. And if you don't screw it up by drifting through them,
you're
going to catch a bunch of fish.
Yeah, and that's always the word. That's why what you said, too, is whatever mechanism, and I'm, you know, I like to ease whatever over, like I'm, you know, trying to be super stealth here, but whatever it is to have it ready, because when you try to go get an anchor out or try to go get unless you have power if you have power poles is one thing, but if you're, you know, if you're using low tech methods like me, it's too late. You're into the fish, and it's surprising with that many fish how you can just, that'll be over, those fish will be going somewhere else. So I mean, you wouldn't think the boat just it'll be gone.
It's gone and it's over, and you're starting all that whole process all over again. So just, you know, even if you want, you know, if you're just using an anchor, just get a little light, and you know, you don't want to use your big main anchor with the chain and everything, because you don't want to be pulling that up every time, because you know, sometimes these bites will last for 3 fish, sometimes they'll last for 50. Mm-hmm. You just never know, or sometimes they'll last for none, you know. So you don't want to have to pull up an anchor, because what it causes you to do is the next time you get bit, you're going like, I ain't putting the anchor out this time. Well, maybe that was 50 fish. Yeah, too much trouble, so I'm not going to put it out, and now I just drifted through a megabyte, you know. So, you know, make it easy on yourself so you'll do it, you know, whatever that happens to be. You know, a big, long pole, you know, the old Cajun anchors work great. Yep. Big, long piece of stainless tied to your boat, you know, you just spear it into the ground, and there's plenty enough to hold. And the other thing you can do is, even if it's windy, a lot of times those don't hold real well, but if you realize you're on something real special, then you can put your big anchor out, you know, and really hold yourself there, because sometimes those bite size might last for an hour.
Well,
you know?
Said.
So you can do something like that, you know, to really secure yourself. So, but the main point is, be ready to stop, because you found some fish.
Coming right back, more with Captain Bobby Arriscado right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and our friend Captain Bobby Arriscado from A-Team Fishing Adventures, breaking down spring fishing, which we are officially in, right, Bobby? And it's even better right now heading in this full moon. And then another one
absolutely.
In May. Yep, it's
another one in May. We got a Christmas in April and a Christmas in May.
It is for a trout fisherman.
If you're a trout fisherman.
You know, we've been talking about, you know, in the boat and techniques out there for, you know, maximizing when you do find them, because that's a challenge. Like you said, you're out there, you're searching for when you do find them to maximize, right? And make you said it could be a one fish or a no fish. It could be a 50 fish stop.
Yep, with quality fish as well as action fish thrown in. Yeah, it's one of those nonstop bites. Yeah.
So now I want to get us out of the boat. We have about 7 minutes left here. So I want, you know me. It's springtime, and I started thinking about wade fishing, too. Now, temperature's got to come up a little bit for me to wet wade, but I'm thinking about wading. Do you ever wade the spots that you're drifting, or are they different? Where do you go?
Well, yes, I do. Some I do. Some of them are, you know, when you start talking about 3 feet, 3 feet in the boat, you know, that's getting on up to but above belly button range right there.
Well, it floats my hat. Just go ahead and say
it. I started to, but I'm not going to. I won't go there. Anyway, for some of us, it's up above belly button range. Let's put it that way. How about that?
Okay, fair.
Anyway, so, you know, when you start getting up there, you know, I'd just soon be out of the boat, because I think you can be stealthy enough to still catch them out of the boat. I want to be in places where I'm thigh deep, thereabouts, you know what I'm saying, maybe waist deep. That's the kind of the depth I want to be in, and that I'm not effective out of the boat. So, you know, I'm at this point, I'm getting out of the boat to be more stealthy. I don't just go wade just to wade fish. I wade because it's more effective.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. If I do it by, you know, if I'm going by myself and I go, I just soon catch, you know, 5 or 6 fish wading than I had, you know, unless they're big ones, you know, a bunch out of the boat. Yeah, you know, I just enjoy doing it because I don't get to do it year-round. But so, you know, answer to your question, sometimes, but more often than not, it's shallower stuff than where I'll actually take the boat up in and try to fish.
You know what's neat about it, though, is to think, when you're wading, and, you know, wading a lot with Bobby and myself over the years, you could be all those ranges of depths you just talked about could be within 50 yards of wade or even a cast. You could be casting into 2 feet. You could cast into 4 feet, you know, depending on how the troughs are if you're fishing like a beach.
Yep. Yep. That's right. You know, and you and when you start learning, when you start doing that, is when you start, as you start doing it, as the morning goes on, you start to understand, you know, what parts of those bar systems you're, you know, where the fish are relating to. So you slow down as you go across them. You know, if you're walking up onto a bar and it goes from, you know, waist deep or belly button deep up to about knee deep, and you're casting out towards the tip of that bar and you start getting bit, you go like, well, the next mm-hmm. bar ought to be the same, and many times it is, you know. So you know, you got to pay attention to that too. Don't just, you know, get out there and just start, you know, blind cast, and pay attention when you know where you're at and you know, the way that the bottom sets up, you know, when you start getting bit. And then a lot of times, you know, this is very generally speaking, if you get, you know, as the sun gets up a little bit, you'll find that those bar systems, which oftentimes run, you know, roughly 45 degrees off the beach, you know, you'll start to find as the sun gets up, a lot of times they'll end up, you know, in the troughs between the bars. So you want to focus on some of that. But that's one of those kind of things you just kind of want to let the fish kind of tell you where they want to be.
Well, I still want to stay in the boat.
I knew I'd get that from Mike.
You know, from. It just seems like, you know, you're going up down the beach. Why not get a little bit further off the beach and throw back?
Mike does not like to get out of the fiberglass.
Yeah, why? But that, Bobby, that would be effective, right? Trolling
not,
with the trolling motor eased down the beach.
No.
And okay, no.
In some places, maybe. In some places, maybe, but if you really want to get, when you start talking about the periods we got coming up next week and the period on into May, Mike, where they're up on, I mean, these fish, the biggest fish I've ever caught in my life was in probably no less than a foot of water at 9 o'clock in the morning, and there's no way you would have caught that fish out of the boat.
Okay.
You know, so... You know, I getting back to it, I'd just be in the boat too. I love the comfort of the boat. I love having 10 other rods in the boat with me instead of one or maybe two out there, and being able to change lures a lot quicker. But you know, when it's effective, it's really something to see. You know, and so we just need to get you out there on a good wade trip with us one day, and we maybe could start changing that opinion a little bit.
Okay.
But I'm with you. Again, going back to what I just said. I don't just jump in the water just to wade fish. You know, if I want to, you know, if I think it's going to be the most effective way to do it, and certain times of year, which is what we got coming up, it is the most effective way to do it, then I'm going to do it.
Okay. I want to, before we got about 2 minutes left, 2.5 minutes left here, we talked about getting to the fish. What are you throwing at the fish right now? What needs to be rigged up in those rods in the boat?
You got to have a popping cork with a shrimp imitation underneath it. Some kind of shrimp imitation, or live shrimp, if you want to use live shrimp. It's not really necessary this time of year, but, you know, some kind of shrimp imitation or live shrimp, and a topwater. If you know how to use a topwater, you're going to have those two lures tied on, because both of those will not only catch fish, but they'll help you locate fish. Both of them are noisy. They attract fish to them, which helps give the fish away. And as I mentioned, you know, way back when we first started talking about this, it's a function of finding the fish. Once you find them this time of year, you can usually wreck them pretty good. So both of those lures are the ones that are going to help you locate those fish. You can always make an adjustment. You could go to a grub. You could go to a slick lure, subsurface mirror lure, something like that, and fine-tune the bite. But those are the two lures that are going to help you at least locate the fish.
What kind of depth do you have on leader on those? Are you adjusting depending on where you are between the cork and the imitation?
Not really. I keep mine roughly around 2 feet, and you know, usually you're dealing with, you know, you're down in that lower third of the column. Even if you're in a deeper, you know, a deeper thing like a 5 foot deal, they'll come up and get that. If they see a shrimp, you know, when they start feeding them, they obviously run to the surface. That's the reason the birds are diving on them. So I usually put about 2 feet, and there's a very, very rare occasion where you have to go deeper than that. More often than not, if I do anything, I'd maybe shallow it up from there. But typically I'm putting about 2 feet. And if I have to cut a little off because we get a knot or for whatever reason, or I lose a lure or whatever, you know, I might splice in a little piece of leader to keep it at 2 feet, but I'm not afraid to go up to about 18 inches. The other thing you run into, if you start going much more than 2 or 2.5 feet, now you start running into issues with trying to cast it.
Yep.
You know, you've got a lot of lure hanging beneath that cork, and then you got the line above the cork. So you're talking about a big, long piece of lure or of rig to cast out. So you got to be careful with that, too. But 2 feet, very generally speaking, is a good depth.
Well said. Captain Bobby, we appreciate the education, as always, and we'll be checking back in for summer fishing soon.
Always
sounds
good.
Sounds good, guys.
Always
thanks,
good.
Man. Well, thank you all for having me on.
Thank you.
There he goes,
Bob.
Captain Bobby Apriscato from 18 Fishing Adventures, and we're gone. We'll see you next week.